You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Lacrosse Boot. If you're looking for a durable rubber boot that hunts as hard as you do, you need to stop by lacrossefootwear.com and check out the Alpha Burley Pro. Lacrosse Boots, done right since 1897.
Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
Happy Friday, everybody. All systems are go. I got the green light from the wife. I get to go hunting Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning, and then I got to be back Sunday night at the house and be a father again. But I got the entire weekend during this pre-rut, this magical pre-rut time that I really love. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. You put the binos up, you're scanning, you sit down a little bit, put the binos up. Next thing you know, you got a day walker. Right? It's the afternoon hunt or a morning hunt or whatever, and it's the first big mature buck you've seen all year long. Maybe it's the first time you've ever seen this buck. Maybe he showed up out of nowhere, but this is the time for that. I sound like a preacher, a southern preacher. Can I get a amen? Anyway, today's podcast is basically a big buck profile, man. We're going to talk with a guy who killed a slammer big, a 9-pointer, I think it is. I don't even know. I'm not looking at the picture right now, but an awesome podcast where we talked to Garrett Byrne. He's a fellow Iowan, and he connected on a piece of property this year that was holding some big deer, and he got access to it, and I don't know, man. I just hope I see a deer like what he shot this year. And that's what today's podcast is about. Now, before we get into today's podcast, Hunter Safety System is a partner of this podcast. And you guys need to go check out their website. Why? Because their product may just save your life. And I say this at the end of every podcast, even before I've been working with this company, because of one reason, and that's the importance of having a safety harness when you're in a tree stand. Shit, I know some guys who should probably be wearing a safety harness when they're in a ground blind, but specifically in a tree stand, we need to be wearing them. It doesn't matter how tough you think you are. You fall 10 feet, even less, there's a chance you never walk again. There's a chance you don't go home to your children and your wife has to raise your children by herself, right? And that to me is not an option. And that is why I wear a safety harness every single time. So if you want to go check out a high quality safety harness, you need to go check out huntersafetysystem.com. And man, they have a ton to choose from. If you like a vest, they have a vest. If you like just a simple plain harness, they have a harness. They have something for setting up tree stands in the summertime. They have it all. So go check out Hunter Safety Systems today. And let's get into today's Big Buck Profile podcast with Garrett Byrne. All right, on the podcast with me right now, Mr. Garrett Byrne. What's up, man?
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
I think that when I flip through social media and I see, like, dream bucks, like when I envision a big buck and I envision what you shot. And so when I was flipping through social media and then you ended up sending me a message and I saw this buck, I was like, dude, I want to get the story. And long story short, we actually met at the Iowa Deer Classic this last year. You came up, introduced yourself, and we talked for a while. So it's good to talk with you again, man. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Now, do you still have a smile on your face?
I do. I haven't hardly slept. I've been on a high.
That's a giant. And not only does it look like giant in the antler department, but it looks like it's a mature buck as well. And I want to get into the entire story of this buck from the moment that you spotted him or found out about him till, the moment that you dropped him off at the taxidermist, or that you pulled the bow back and you shot him. So before we get started, why don't you tell everybody, where are you from and what do you do for a living?
Yeah, I'm from Eastern Iowa, and I'm a project manager at a damage restoration company called Rainbow International. So, like, we dry out flooded basements and clean up fire damaged homes.
Okay. I did that. One of my buddies, his dad had a business like this, and I got laid off from a job several years ago. I needed some money, and I did a flooded basement. They went on vacation. In the summertime, their electricity went out and one of their pipes burst all at the same time. So that moisture just cooked in their house, in their basement. And long story short, got mold. So we had to go into their basement and just tear everything out, clean it up. And not a fun job, I will tell you that.
No, our guys work hard. Well, you know all about it then.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing that?
I did it growing up. My father and mother actually owned the business.
Oh, okay.
And I moved away after college for a few years. My wife and I lived in Omaha, and then we moved back here 3 years ago. So I've been working for him for 3 years now.
Gotcha. Any kids?
One kid, Everly. My wife and I's first kid was born in March, and we'd moved home kind of planning to have kids and be near grandparents.
Gotcha. So you got one little one. Right, and this is going to be your first. Well, no, you're tagged out.
I'm tagged out
until gun season. So it's not like that's not even
until
an issue.
Gun.
Like having
no. She's so happy.
Oh, that's nuts, man! I wish. There's a part of me, especially with three kids, that I wish I could go out one of the first couple weeks of October. You know, one of the opening weekends, nail a deer, and then come home and not have to listen to, you know, all the, hey, you know, you're going to be gone for 2 weeks, all that, you know, like all that kind of stuff. But my luck, here's what I would do. I'd really screw it up, right? I'd tag out early, and then I'd get on the computer and like, okay, what states near me are over the counter? And then I would try to find another place to hunt.
I have spots in Nebraska I've already been thinking about, but I don't think I should bring that up. Yeah. I think I just need to be happy.
Yeah. And you should be. So before you started recording, you know, we're going to go straight to it, right? We're going to go to July, right? And July is what happened in July.
Yeah. July, pulled a trail camera, set up more trail cameras than I ever had this year. And, pulled one card, was flipping through pictures, and, it was set over a bean field, and I really didn't have any pictures on it. So I was doing that fast flip, and I hit a picture that had two bucks that were running at the camera, and, behind them was the third buck. And, although it was hard to tell, cheap cameras, far away picture, it was obviously just an absolute giant. You could make out the frame. You could tell he had some sort of extra point below the brow tine, and immediately sent that to all my buddies.
Yeah. So was this a piece of public property, family property, knock on door permission?
Yep. This was a knock on door permission property.
Cool. So describe this property for us a little bit so that everybody knows, you know, where this buck was living, the terrain that, you know, maybe a little bit about where you think he was bedding and the travel routes he was taking, what the crops were, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of timber, a lot of crops, like most of Iowa. It's mainly oaks and then a lot of that multiflora thorns.
Yeah.
It's really thick of that in the area I hunt around here. Where I initially got this picture was more of what I felt like was a summer pattern for him. He was pretty far away from timber and obviously feeding out in the beans. So that's where I initially saw him.
Okay. So when you got this picture, you know, obviously you shared it with your buddies and, you know, I don't know about you, but trail camera pictures in the summer are great. But then for me personally, I've noticed that, you know, over the years, some of these big giant bucks, they don't stick around, right? You get the trail camera picture of them. That's easy. But then actually trying to locate them and kill them is a completely different story. So what was running through your head after you got this trail camera picture and about maybe like how you were going to try to harvest this buck? Or was it kind of just a pipe dream at that point?
Yeah, it felt like a pipe dream. You know, I showed a lot of my buddies and some of my buddies from Omaha I used to hunt with, as well as the guy I hunt with locally here too, my friend Nick, and we discussed it, and it felt like a pipe dream. I felt like I needed to expand the area. I had permission. I had permission quite a ways from this area, as well as right in that area. And I felt like, you know, maybe it's possible he would move to one of those other areas. I did have permission. I felt like there's no way he would stay in this area between his summer and fall range. I had never seen this deer before, and putting about 30 miles of boots on the ground shed hunting, including with my hunting partner Nick, we did not pick up his antlers.
Right.
Never kicked him up before he shed, nothing like that. So I felt like this was probably his summer range, and I was going to have to expand where I had permission to ever find him. So it felt like a pipe dream, but I pretty much was willing to eat tag soup chasing the dream.
Okay. So how many years did you have permission on that property? Was this like recent, or have you been hunting there for several years?
Yeah, so I have a few permissions in this area, and so all kind of been for different amounts of time that I've had them. Some, you know, quite a few years, some for a year, some this year that I gained as well. So it just kind of varied on the property.
Gotcha. So you got a whole bunch of properties in this area. Now, when you said expand, you know, you needed to expand, you're talking about neighboring farms to try to locate this particular buck?
Yeah. I'm referring to neighboring farms. From where he was, where I originally got that picture, I just scoured maps that I've already, of course, had looked at for many hours. I just stare at maps most nights during the summer, just dreaming, but trying to figure out what would be the most logical move for him. Looking up different QDMA articles on how far deer move from their summer to fall ranges. And of course it varies. So I didn't feel confident, but it was just one of those things I felt like I had to do just to try.
So. Yeah. So was that endeavor successful? Did you gain any more access?
After that picture? No, I did not. Okay. No, there was a few very large farms that I tried to gain access to that I felt like would really open up a lot of opportunities to see him in the fall. And those did not go through.
All right. Just out of curiosity, when you went, you knock on these doors or you call them up and they say no to you, what were they telling you no? I mean, what was their excuse?
It's other hunters. Usually it's just, you know, hey, we already have other hunters. I would never usually knock on a door in July or later than that. I knock on doors in before shed season.
Yeah.
I usually ask for shed hunting permission and turkey hunting permission. Because in my experience, even if they don't grant those, they're usually super nice people and they're just willing to talk to you about the area, talk to you about other people that allow hunters and talk about their deer hunting. Some of them are deer hunters. So it kind of opens it up to the conversation. When you have that conversation in the spring, they don't feel like they have to be defensive about their deer. And in my experience, you just meet some cool people that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing about it is just because they say no that year, I mean, you've broke the ice, you've talked to them. Hell, maybe in 2 or 3 years, they'll say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I knock on doors, some doors year after year. Everywhere I have permission, I'm there a few times in the spring and summer just to say hi, just to keep my face out there and just make sure they know who I am and just see if they need help with anything.
Absolutely. All right. So after you got this picture of this buck, you realized it's something you wanted to chase and chase somewhat aggressively. Talk to me about the rest of the summer and maybe a little bit about other trail camera pictures that you got. Did you bring more trail camera pictures into that area? What did you do for preparation for this upcoming season?
Yeah, I really, I was kind of between strategies on just absolute don't touch the area at all. Just try to stay out of it, just to try to never spook this deer. But I also felt like I had to get a picture of his fall range just to narrow down where he might bed. From my shed hunting, I had found bedding areas that I felt would hold bucks, just between finding buck beds. But I didn't know which bedding area that he would probably use. So we spread cameras out. The guy I hunt with, Nick and I, we spread cameras out pretty far. We had we put our cameras together. We had 7 cameras that we spread out far and wide on these properties.
Okay, and on this particular property, though, how many acres was this particular property?
Yeah, between the few I have in the area, we're in the hundreds.
Okay, in the hundreds of acres, but where yeah. This buck was living, right? Because you knocked on all the doors surrounding this property. They said no. So how many acres was this property?
I wouldn't even know. I wouldn't even know. So it's mixed between tillable and timber, and I couldn't even tell you how much was in each.
Okay, so, I mean, small, like 50 or 100? Basically,
because there's adjoining properties and there's some that are spread out further, and I think we're in the hundreds.
Okay, so basically what I'm getting at is, you know, once you realize how many acres you have to hunt, you know, if you have 1,000 acres and this buck is in a certain point, you know, a part of a farm, you can go in different ways. You can attack him from all sides based off different wind directions. But if it's a smaller property, you may have to bide your time. You may have to wait for the right conditions, the right winds. Access is limited. So what I'm trying to get at is, you know, with the property that you felt he was living on, did you feel that you were going to be able to be aggressive with the upcoming season and the strategy to hunt him? Or did you feel it was going to be one of those things where it was like, okay, I need to chill out and I need to bide my time?
Yeah, I would say somewhere between that. I had stands that I had set up near bedding areas that I thought would be a big buck's fall range, in hopes that would be his fall range. And I had other stands set up that were honestly more for doe hunting. I had an antlerless tag as well. So I had some stands that I felt I would never kill this buck out of no matter what. And I had 2 stands set up that I felt would be, if I was going to kill him out of a pre-hung set, that's what it would be. And then I had my portable that I would hang and hunt in areas that I didn't even have cameras in. They were just hard to get to spots. And I figured those would be good rut hunting spots when my other 2 that I felt would be good didn't pan out.
Gotcha. So you went in, and during the shed season is when you located these, all before you even knew this buck existed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Before I knew he existed, I was waiting for this year and trying to find the best areas.
Okay.
I didn't hang stands. I didn't get stands up until August.
Gotcha.
But I was in there in August hanging stands.
Gotcha. All right. So did your strategy change at all from the spring to August when you actually, you know, got pictures of him?
I think I was, you know, I didn't check trail cameras. There was one camera that I could check about every 2 weeks. It was very close to a road. But my other cameras, some of them soaked as long as 9 weeks.
Right.
I didn't want to touch them. I had one that was near a stand, which I normally don't like to do. I feel like putting anything close to a stand and even having to walk the direction of a trail camera from your stand just disperses more scent. But I did it, and I ended up the particular stand I ended up killing out of, I had hung in August. I was already late home. I was supposed to be home at noon, and it was like 2, because of course it took me much longer to get everything set up than I thought it would.
Right.
And I actually had hung this set in an area that when I turkey hunted, I was scouting. I got it hung, and then I realized when I got in, it just wasn't going to work. I convinced myself just to leave it where it was, and that I would move it in the fall if I needed to, but I realized it was in the wrong spot. I ended up pulling the whole thing and moving it that day into the tree that ended up being the right tree.
So. Gotcha. All right. So you got pictures of them in July. Any more pictures from July to October, you know, in that that late summer
yep.
through September? Any more trail camera pictures of him? Did he shift? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah, the closer it got to fall, the further away he started moving. I got pictures of him far and wide on almost every single camera when he was in velvet. You know, I was excited, but I still felt like just because I had pictures of him in velvet doesn't mean I'll find him in the when he's hard horned.
Right.
So there was one particular instance where in 3 hours, all during daylight, he had moved a mile between, like, I think it was 6 and 9 in the morning. He walked a mile as a crow flies all during daylight when he was in velvet.
Okay. Okay. So he moved around a lot, or was that just like one particular instance?
Yeah, he moved around a lot. He started, it seemed like as the summer got later, I really didn't know what to think of him or even decide where he was been that summer, because he started just making trips and my camera's far and wide. Everything just seemed to catch him.
Gotcha.
I did not get a hardhorn picture until I went into, I guess that would have been my second hunt of the year. I went and hunted the stand that I eventually killed him out of, which was way too early, and I never should have hunted that stand, but I really wanted to check that camera. I was excited. I checked it, and sure enough, there he was. And it was 3 hours after dark. He was hard horned, and he was walking by that stand, like at least by that camera.
Okay. So you got pictures of him throughout the entire summer, right? All through September.
Yeah, many pictures.
Yep. And so he had a big range. And it sounds to me like it was difficult for you to locate maybe like a core area from a plan of attack. So when October 1st hit, you knew it was hunting season. You knew this deer was somewhat in the area. How did you know that some of these places would be good for that particular buck? Or was it just the scenario of, hey, he's in the area, these are good bedding areas, that's where I'm going to start?
Yeah, I would say that second part's my strategy. I was just going to, I was really kind of on doe hunts, my first few hunts. I did have that one hunt out of the stand that I felt was closer to bedding areas. Based off my trail camera, ended up, there was a few of the larger deer I had on camera were using that area. So my scouting paid off.
Okay, so then, with, you know, with this, with the season starting, how did you decide what tree stand to sit? I mean, was this an accident? I'll be blunt and I'll say, was this an accident? Were you hunting does and he came through?
This was an accident. Yeah. This morning, the morning of the hunt, it was, I think that was the 21st. It was this past Sunday here. It was cold. It dropped in temperatures. I think it was like 26 or 27 when I woke up.
Right.
The day before, my buddy Nick had killed a buck. So I didn't get out that evening before. We were at home butchering his deer. I originally had set up to go to the pumpkin patch with my wife on Sunday and our daughter, of course, so we could get cute pictures of her. And it was going to be cold, and I didn't have permission to hunt that morning. And so I had to ask, you know, I said, hey, I didn't get a hunt tonight. Is there any way I can go in the morning? I will definitely make it to the pumpkin patch. But then I had to be honest and tell her, you know, if I shoot a deer, there's absolutely no possible way I'll make it to this pumpkin patch. And
yeah. And
she thought that was okay. So I went out. The stand, it was just such a cold snap, and it was still earlier than I wanted to hunt my main stand, but on it, my stand, it's a stand that I killed out of last year. It's literally the same tree. It's just, it's, you know, on a northwest wind, it's downwind off of a doe bedding area. It just worked out perfectly. I had a few big deer walk by that stand last year when I was in it. the wind that morning was almost still, but it was a northwest wind. But about an hour into daylight, it was going to switch from the south. Yeah. I really wanted to hunt that stand, but I just didn't want to hunt it on the wrong wind. That morning, I decided I was going to do a hanging hunt. So I kind of planned on where I was going to hang and hunt, where I felt like I could kill a doe. I ended up getting out late due to just a really weird morning. I ended up getting out late and decided, well, I can walk over to this stand over here. I think I can, you know, I think it'll be a good hunt over here. Did not expect to see him. I honestly have had the slowest start to the year ever. This was my fifth hunt out, and until the day before, I hadn't seen a deer. So I went three hunts in a row without seeing a deer. On my fourth hunt, I saw one buck that any other year I would have shot. It's the largest deer I ever passed. And then that morning when I was hunting, I actually had an eight pointer come by that I believe I had on trail camera. He was a really nice deer. It was just fun watching him. But at that point, I still just really was just kind of out there to enjoy the woods and enjoy my time out there.
Cool. So you did a run and gun to the same tree that you shot last year's deer out of, or was that stand pre-hunt?
I was between three things. So I was out of the tree I had shot a deer out of last year. It was the wrong wind. So I kind of felt I could set up in that area kind of on the other side of that spot due to the wind change.
Okay.
And I was going to do a run and gun. But because I arrived late, I realized I didn't have time to do a hang, you know, just to hang a stand that morning before right. daylight, and that I was going to go to the stand I had hunted once before this year.
Gotcha. Okay. And that was the stand that you killed your deer out of last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So what I want you to do now is to tell me about that specific stand. All right. You mentioned that it was downwind of a bedding area, but what makes that area so good? And why do you think that deer was visiting, you know, came to that area? You know, what food source was he coming from? What was he doing? What was the terrain in that specific area?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing I haven't figured out is where he was feeding, where he ended up coming from that morning. It was, I think he came through about 40 minutes after legal shooting time. And I really don't think he was feeding on crops. If he would have been in the crop field that, from the direction he came from, he would have been seen, I feel by people. He just kind of was in an area that I think he would have been seen. Where I was, though, there's a lot of oaks, middle of October. Best thing I can think of was he was out there feeding on acorns in the morning, and just that cold snap kept him up late enough that he wasn't in his bed yet.
Right. Okay. Makes a lot of sense. Now, so when he was coming, was he below you coming up? Were you below him and he was coming down? Why don't you talk?
I was kind of between two ridges there. But I'm at the bottom of this ridge. I'm in a hickory tree, and it's when I hung this stand, I just loved the tree because there's so much cover,
right?
In it, I felt like the deer would use it because it was kind of where the younger trees were, and so it was much thicker right where I was, as compared to up the ridge was older, more mature trees. Where it was just less thick, and then below me, if you kept going down, it was more open with more grasses, and I just felt like being in that they would use the bottom of that ridge just because they were just more hidden. It was just thicker.
Right. Okay. So now, why don't you walk us through from the moment that you got into the stand late, right? You got set up. And you said it was 40 minutes after shooting light that he came through. Why don't you talk to us about what he did, what you did, the whole final, you know, his final last 30 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. It was just one of those mornings you just really enjoyed, Dan. It was the first cool morning I'd hunted. It was the first morning I hunted of the year. I guess second morning I hunted that year, but it was just, it was cooler. It was nice. I actually had to wear gloves. It was just one of those things. I felt like it was finally deer season.
Right.
It was just one of those mornings. I didn't feel distracted. I didn't feel like I need to look at my phone. I was just really enjoying the moment. I looked down the trail that I felt the deer would come out of. And right away I saw antlers, and right away I knew, I knew it was a big deer. I didn't know it was him. I had a lot of pictures of this deer, but at this point it was pretty thick, but I could see he was just on a line coming right at me. The trail he was going to come on in the direction he came from, he was going to walk right by one of my trail cameras. And, it was kind of one of those, in the moment it was, hey, this is cool. Either way, I'm gonna get this deer on camera. And then as he kept coming in, if he would have taken the trail that he was on, he would have been basically quartering towards so hard in the first 20-yard shooting lane that I have that there would have been no shot. He would have had to continue on that trail, walk through my boot tracks that I walked in on, which I was already concerned about. He would have had to pass my tree at about 10 yards, and then he would have came out on that trail 15 yards where I actually have a good shooting lane. So the direction he was coming from had me nervous right away. As the deer's still coming in, I'm looking at his antlers, and I didn't know it was him. I had my heart set on this deer this year, but I also just through discussions with my friends and stuff, told myself that I really shouldn't set my heart on one deer. If I see another deer that gets me excited, I should shoot it and be happy. and I saw this deer and I started convincing myself, it doesn't matter if it's not the buck. We ended up naming him Copenhagen. It doesn't matter if it's not Copenhagen. You need to shoot this deer. This is a really good deer. As he was coming in on the trail, all of a sudden he changed direction. And instead of walking where he would have been 15 yards from me, he started headed directly towards me. At this point I knew, and that was at about 35 yards, and he's heading on a string right nose to the tree, right to my tree.
Yeah.
I started getting, it was excitement knowing that, okay, as soon as he turns at any point I can shoot, but also, oh crap, this deer is way too close. So he walked to 10 yards and then put his nose to the ground, so he's facing directly at me.
No shot. Okay.
I mean, that was wide open. It's the most open area I have out of my tree stand, but just head on with his head down. So nothing I can do at this point. I haven't even drawn yet. Just kind of bearing down on him. I can vividly remember, Dan, looking down at this deer because I can see his front shoulders, and that's what I'm looking at, and just realizing this is the most wide-bodied deer I have ever seen in my life. Holy crap, look at this deer's shoulders.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just – it just blew my mind. I'd never seen a deer with a body like this, and it just shocked me. It was just, oh, my gosh, look at his body.
Right.
At this point, I wasn't shaky. I was giving myself one of those internal pep talks you try to give yourself to make a good shot, and telling myself, you know, you can do this. You practice. You can do this. You can make this shot. Make the shot. He picked his head up, so he's still at 10 yards. He didn't look up the tree. He was just looking straight ahead. Then he put his head back down. At this point I knew if he starts to turn, it's still a hard quartering toward shot. I had just watched an episode of the Hunting Public. I think it was last week, where Jake, one of the guys, he shot a deer that was just barely quartering towards him. And my goodness, that looked like a perfect shot. And the deer ended up living a lot longer than they thought he would. And I just heard so many horror stories with quartering toward shots, hit one lung, or obviously just being a little too far back and just being a gut shot. I was scared. I did not want to take a quartering towards shot. But when he put his head down the second time, I knew that if I didn't draw, you know, this is my best chance of drawing. He can't see me where he's looking now. So I drew back. I was just holding on him. I was holding kind of right behind where I thought his shoulder would be once he turned. And I kept trying to keep myself from pulling the trigger. I did not want target paint to set in and pull at that time. All of a sudden he started to turn and go the way I needed him to. As he was turning, eventually I found a point where he was, I believed he was still quartering towards me, pretty hard. I tucked it behind his shoulder. And as soon as I had it behind that shoulder, I did not squeeze the trigger. I punched the trigger. I was excited. I saw the arrow go through where I wanted it to go through, but I did think it was too far back. I shot and he did not react. Even though I watched the arrow go through him, he walked
No jump, no mule kick, nothing.
He walked 10 yards, but he didn't walk 10 yards away. He just walked 10 yards at an angle. And so he was still 10 yards from me and he's out in the wide open and he's perfectly broadside now. And he's just staring at me. And I've never had a deer do this, just not run off. I literally look and there's just a hole in the side of him. And I'm like, that looks like about where it should be, just a little far back. And all of a sudden I was concerned that I'm like, did I just gut shot this deer? Was I that far back? I had already been loading another arrow. I got another arrow in and, he's just staring at me and I come to full draw. And as I'm drawing, he starts running. Yeah. Well, he's about to get behind a bunch of trees. I had felt that if I had made a lethal shot, which was a gut shot, but an imperfect shot, I don't care where I hit him. I'm putting another arrow in him. I tried to follow him, pull the trigger. And of course I missed. So I missed him on that second shot. He ran about 50 yards, and I'm already loading another arrow. At this point, he's behind way too much brush, where I definitely couldn't get a shot. But I'd already come to full draw. I have a single pin sight, and I did not range where he was at this third time. And so I'm at full draw, and I'm thinking, I should let off and range this deer if I'm going to shoot again. But I thought, you know, as soon as I let off, he's going to run. He wasn't looking my way, but he had just run up a hill and, was broadside, but he was behind a bunch of small trees and, he started hunching.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I gut shot this deer. I have to put another arrow in him. And I thought, I don't care if I lose this arrow or, I mean, obviously no one would care if they lost an arrow in this case, but it was just, I can't do this to this deer. I have to send another arrow that way.
Was he making any noise?
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't going like or anything like
none.
That. No. Okay.
None. And I actually had enough time to watch him where he was standing there hunched. And I thought, is it going to be wobbly? And he didn't wobble one bit.
Yeah.
And so everything to me, Dan, pointed to, I just gut shot this deer.
Yeah.
I target panicked again. I pulled the trigger. I had what looked to be just a few inch gap. I shot, I heard a thud and that's when he took off running. I thought, oh geez, I just hit this deer again. I immediately took a video. It's actually on my Facebook. Just right after, I just pulled out my phone and videoed myself. And I pretty much just had the most blank stare you can possibly have in the world.
Yeah.
I had no clue what to think. I had just shot three arrows at a deer. I had never done that in my entire life. And I didn't know what to think. I realized this was the biggest buck I'd ever shot at. I may have just messed it up. I realized it was a deer I was after. And I didn't know what to think. I turned off that video and I called my hunting buddy, Nick. I called him about seven times and he never answered. And so I had to talk to somebody. I was so shaky. And next person on my list, I called my dad. My dad was at a wedding in St. Louis that weekend, but he was driving back, him and my mom. And I called him and I'm all shaky voice. And I just do the, Dad, Dad.
Like you're 5 years old again. And
like I'm five and there's a monster in the room. Yeah. And he goes, yes, son. I said, I just shot that big one I told you about, the pictures that I shot him. He goes, we'll see. Okay, son, calm down. I said, I need your help, Dad. I think I shot him bad. He goes, it's okay, son. Calm down. And I had made a very similar string of texts. If you can put that emotion in the text of last year when I'd shot a deer, I'd probably send him about 73 texts in a row before he ever texted me back once. Deer, got him, big deer, got him, help.
Help.
I'm in the woods, I'm far away, help, come out here, where you at? Kind of one of those. But I waited about 30 minutes. I climbed down, and I decided I was going to look for those three arrows. The direction he ran, I felt I could really back out and move away from any of the creeks that I thought he may have went to. Well, the first arrow I pulled was full. I'm colorblind, Dan. So
okay.
On a blood trail, I'm worthless. So it appeared to me to be dark red blood, and I did not see any bubbles.
Okay.
So I was excited. I thought I'd hit the liver.
Yeah.
The second arrow I went and found, and it was in the dirt. It was a clean miss. Went up the ridge, and I'd found the third arrow. And all there was a little bit of belly hair on it and like one streak of blood.
Right.
I'm like, okay, so pretty much my first arrow is the only thing arrow that mattered. At that point, I backed out. So,
yeah.
Backed out of the woods and got a hold of my dad and my hunt buddy Nick, telling him I was going to need help later.
All right. So, how long did you wait before you guys, you know, till you assembled the cavalry and went in looking for him?
Yeah. So, I went to the pumpkin patch. I made it to the pumpkin patch. Anything to get my mind off that deer and to give me time, I was going to wait 6 hours to start trailing him. I thought if it was a liver shot, 6 hours will do. If it's a gut shot, I just want to find this first bed maybe and then back out of there. Nick's texted me back and said, you know, you need to go to that pumpkin patch. Try to act like you care about the pumpkin patch while you're there. he's married, so he understands. And
right.
He's like, just try to have fun at the pumpkin patch.
Right.
So we did the whole pumpkin patch ordeal. And then I met up with my dad and Nick, and we went back in the woods about 1 o'clock.
Okay. So you go back to where you shot him or to probably where you fired that last arrow at. And
yep.
You know, was there any blood on the ground from the, you know, from that third arrow or well, where you shot him at that third arrow, but from the first time that you hit him?
Yeah. From the first time I hit him, there was blood. And then where he had walked or kind of jogged that 10 yards and stopped broadside, it had poured out a little bit there. After that, it was really sparse. So up at that third arrow, there was a little bit. Nick and my dad, since they're not colorblind, they said, we'll take the trail. And I said, I'm just going to circle about 75 yards ahead of you guys, where the direction he went, and I'm just going to glass. And I just want to, because if he gets up, I want to be able to stop us before we continue searching.
Right.
That was my only concern.
Right.
So I was ahead and I get to where I'm like, okay, I can look out and see pretty far here. I'm standing there about 10 seconds and, 75 yards away, a big old buck jumps up and takes off. And it was right the direction that buck I had shot at last went. So, you can imagine how that felt, Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, I was,
you thought it was him.
No, I knew it was him. That's him. It's a big buck. It's right where I saw him. This ain't good. I just wounded an animal in the worst way. And we just jumped him. This is literally the worst thing. So I mean, I took off running up the ridge, and I just started going, just stop, guys, just stop, stop. I saw him. He just jumped up. I said, he's far enough away. Let's just find his last bed where he laid in. We're just going to find his last bed, and we're going to back out of here, and I'm going to come back tonight. And I was going to walk the creeks. I was convinced at that point I had just gut shot him, and the blood on the ground was just somehow that was, I had gotten that blood out of him. But my dad goes, that's okay. It's okay, son. And so I was just mad at my dad. I was furious. He's like, it's okay.
Shut
that's
up, good. Dad. It's you don't okay. know nothing.
Yeah. You don't know anything, Dad. I was just down. I felt I was going to lose this deer. So I started searching this thick brush that he had come out of, and I'm just zigzagging. And my dad and Nick pretty much just didn't pay any attention to what I did, and they just kept following the blood trail. Well, it got really, they pretty much found last blood and probably for 20 minutes just kept searching. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's the direction I'm at, guys. Just come help me where I'm at, where I saw him get up. I need help finding his last bed. Well, I'm walking this area and I find it was clearly a buck bed. And I knew it was close to where this deer jumped up and there was absolutely no blood in it. And at that point I thought, this is either another bed or that wasn't my deer. I still thought that was my deer and I was looking at the wrong bed, but at least it gave me a little hope.
Right.
So I just started walking the creek that he had crossed looking for blood. Not that I can see it very well, but I thought, well, maybe I'll be able to find a big track. Maybe I'll find something. And then I can really get on my hands and knees and look for blood. So I'm walking this creek this was about the 20 minutes. I gave up. I started walking back towards my dad. As I'm walking towards my dad, I get like 70 yards from him. And all of a sudden, I literally am looking at him. And I see his eyes go from just normal to his eyes just went wide open. And his arms just went straight up. and he just starts screaming. Son, Garrett, he's dead, he's dead. I'm just like a little kid sprinting up the hill after him. There he was. I mean, he was like, we were standing like 20 yards from him for 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how we didn't see him, but, or Nick and my dad we just didn't see him. It was just one of those moments I'll never forget. It was just seeing how big he was, it just blew my mind. Just absolutely blew my mind. Having my dad there was just so cool.
Yeah.
We're hugging and doing that whole thing. And then here comes Nick up and he's just got a big smile on his face, just taking it all in. I mean, it was, of course I'm wondering how this deer died so soon. This is only about 100 yards from where I shot him,
right?
Like on the trail he took, like he went 100 yards from where I first shot him. I double lunged and hard shot him.
Really?
And you thought you hit him
way back?
Not way back. I thought I hit him about where the liver was, and I thought he was quartering towards me. So I was just convinced that it just went back through the guts. I swear he was quartering towards me when I shot, but that arrow went through, he was close to me. It was high, but at the angle he was, that's where it should have went through. So it came in high about midway through his body, went through both lungs, touched the heart, and then came out low by his front left leg. My third arrow gut shot him.
Okay.
So, my third shot was stupid. If I wouldn't have done that, he probably just died where he was standing. But, that's just looking back, but
that's crazy.
I made a perfect shot and I had no clue I did.
That's crazy. Cause you just described what happened to my buck last year. Like I hit liver complete pass through broadside, hit liver, no lung. I may have nicked lung, but I hit liver for sure. and he hunched up, and he didn't kick or nothing. He just kind of walked in this half circle and was just, you could tell he was in pain, and then he started fading because he was bleeding so much. And that, like, the way you told the story, I said, oh, you hit liver all day long. You hit liver. But
yeah,
then this dude reacted like you didn't just drill him. I mean, you smoked him, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, it was just the weirdest thing in the world, Dan. It's not how deer react to a lung shot. I don't get it.
Right.
I do not understand it. I don't get it, but boy, am I happy.
Oh yeah. So we got to wrap up here pretty soon, but you walk over to him and you put your hands on him for the first time. It's the biggest buck you've ever shot. What was going through your head at that point?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm no special hunter. I've been hunting 16 years. I hunt with my family a lot during gun season, and I just love to bow hunt. It's just been the last few years that I've started passing deer, waiting for bigger deer. And I've always just dreamed of having the opportunity to hunt a deer of this caliber. It's just rare. I've never seen it. I've hunted 16 years, and I've never seen a deer like this on trail camera where I hunt. I've never seen a deer like this driving down the road, and I've always wanted the opportunity, just the opportunity to hunt a deer of this size. I had the opportunity, and I just feel so blessed, Dan, just to be able to hunt this deer and then to kill this deer is just like, just beyond me. I'm nothing special. This could happen to anybody. I just feel lucky that I just hunted an area that had this deer in it. And I mean, it's just, what are the odds? It's just the third deer I saw this year ends up being the biggest buck of my life. And it just, I feel so lucky. I'm so lucky. So blessed.
Right. Right. And it's amazing. It's an amazing story. It's, you know, a lot of times the story, you know, this story that you told today, a lot of time the climax is like right when you shoot him. But for me, I like hearing the back end of the story too, right? Like after the shot and how you were worried and how you're like, you didn't find much blood and all these things led up to you, you know, you doubting your shot and you doubting that you were going to recover him or whatnot. And then everything just flips. And then it goes from feeling completely like shit to feeling like you're the king of the world. And it's just, it's awesome. And congratulations, man. That's a beautiful deer. So just so everybody at home knows who's listening to this, why don't you describe the rack?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a mainframe 9-pointer. He's got a basically what I would call a kicker below his brow tine, but it's a 9-inch kicker below his brow tine. It sits right below on his left brow tine, right below that. He's got a big kicker on his left G2. He's got two different points that come off it. Only one of them's scoreable, but it's just super cool. And then about halfway up his main beam on his left side, he's just all bladed up.
Yeah.
On his right side, he's got another kicker off his brow tine. I think he comes out at, I can't remember, Dan, I'm so excited, 11 or 12 scoreable points. It's just the tallest darn deer I've ever seen. He's only 17 and a half inches wide. So he's just kind of one of those tight deer where his rack comes in, but he's just taller. Every single tine of his is tall. There's not a short tine on him.
Yeah. And one thing you forgot to mention is like, are those 10-inch, 12-inch brow tines?
Those are, it's funny because I had someone score him. I hadn't even put a tape on anything. I think they're only 9 or 9.5-inch brow tines.
Okay.
They're just thick. They're thick, tall brow tines. It's just the coolest looking deer I've ever seen.
Yeah. And he's definitely gorgeous. And you're right. He is a giant bodied deer. Any guess, did your taxidermist or anybody get an age on him estimated?
No. I have a cousin that that he sends his deer into a lab to get tested. So I've already reached out to him, and he said, hey, you got to send 6 deer at a time. I already have 6 I was going to send up. Go ahead and get me your teeth, and we'll send them into the lab and get them checked. So I, you know, this is a deer of a lifetime for me, and so I'm curious what the age is at. I have no clue. I mean, he's not young.
No.
But his head, see Dan, his head doesn't. His body is just ginormous, but his head to me doesn't look that big.
Yeah.
But I think it might be just because he's got more mass on him. His head looks smaller. I don't know. Maybe he is young. I don't know.
I got a deer hanging on my wall who has a very small head, but I guessed him at 6 years old, but he's got a short, his head is wide, but from snout to the top of his head is shorter. So it's almost like he has a shorter nose.
This deer too.
Yeah. And that's what yours looks like. I mean, he looks like a pit bull, just like real thick.
Body
and it, maybe it's just the picture I'm looking at, but his body doesn't look real long, but it is mass. His front shoulders are huge. You know, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at that trail camera picture now, and he's got all the characteristics of a big buck. You know, he's got the sway back. He's got the big belly. His legs look short. So he's definitely mature. I'd put him at 5 or 6 maybe.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be so cool. I've never seen a buck that old. I really don't believe I have. It's just, I just feel so lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, congratulations, man. And if you get out again, whether it's with a gun or late season, good luck. And I appreciate you taking time to hop on the podcast today.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And there you have it, another podcast in the books. Congratulations, Garrett, on harvesting an absolute dream whitetail. That's a very beautiful buck. Huge shout out to all the listeners of this podcast for taking time, as always, to download and listen to these podcasts. Man, I really appreciate it. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast: Exodus, Wasp, Lone Wolf, Deer Lab, Prime, Ripcord, Ozonix, and Hunter Safety Systems. Guys, please go out and support those companies because they support this podcast. I would really appreciate that. If you haven't already, go to iTunes, leave a review, let everybody know that I'm a huge dumbass or that you like this podcast. I got a lot of awesome 5-star reviews. If you like it, give it a 5-star review. If you don't, well, then don't comment on it. Please go check out social media. Nine Finger Chronicles is on Instagram and Facebook. Please like and share. Share this with all your friends, right? Tell them if they're an outdoor enthusiast, I think that the Sportsman's Nation as a whole has something to offer them, whether it's big game. We got a waterfowl podcast coming in the future. We got fishing content coming in the future. So it's going to be a one-stop shop for all of your outdoor needs. And lastly, it's that time of year, man. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. We're going to start grinding. We're going to get tired. We're going to get up at these trees. We're going to go down these trees. And all I want to say is please wear a safety harness, right? Wear your damn safety harness. And I'll say it one more time, just as a reminder to all of you, our friends at Hunter Safety Systems are reminding us to please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good weekend and good luck.